and the characters will, in almost every case, be looked for there in vain. I dedicate this story of out-of-door life and country people first to my father and mother, my two best friends, and also to all my other friends whose names I say to myself lovingly, though I do not write them here. S.O.J. Chapter 1. Kate Lancaster's Plan. I had been spending the winter in Boston, and Kate Lancaster and I had been together a great deal, for we are the best of friends. It happened that the morning when this story begins, I had waked up feeling sorry, and as if something dreadful were going to happen. There did not seem to be any good reason for it, so I undertook to discourage myself more by thinking that it would soon be time to leave town, and how much I should miss being with Kate and my other friends. My mind was still disquieted when I went down to breakfast, but beside my plate I found, with a hoped-for letter from my father, a note from Kate. To this day I have never known any explanation of this depression of my spirits, and I hope that the good luck which followed will help some reader to lose fear, and to smile at such shadows, if any chance to come. Kate had evidently written to me in an excited state of mind, for her note was not so trig-looking as usual, but this is what she said. "Dear Helen, I have a plan. I think it is a most delightful plan, in which you and I are chief characters. Promise that you will say yes. If you do not, you will have to remember all your life that you broke a girl's heart. Come round early and lunch with me and dine with me. I'm to be all alone, and it's a long story and will need a great deal of talking over. K." I showed this note to my aunt, and soon went round, very much interested. My latch-key opened the Lancaster's door, and I hurried to the parlor, where I heard my friend practicing with great diligence. I went up to her, and she turned her head and kissed me solemnly. "You need not smile. We are not sentimental girls, and are both much averse to indiscriminate kissing, though I have not the adroit habit of shying in which Kate is proficient. It would sometimes be impolite in any one else, but she shies so affectionately." "Won't you sit down, dear?" she said with great ceremony, and went on with her playing, which was abominable that morning. Her fingers stepped on each other, and whatever the tune might have been in reality, it certainly had a most remarkable incoherence as I heard it then. I took up the new little, and made believe read it, and finally threw it at Kate. You would have thought we were two children. "Have you heard that my grand-aunt, Miss Catherine Brandon of Deephaven, is dead?" I knew that she had died in November, at least 6 months before. "Don't be nonsensical, Kate," said I. "What is it you are going to tell me?" "My grand-aunt died very old, and was the last of her generation. She had a sister and three brothers, one of whom had the honor of being my grandfather. Mama is sole heir to the family estates in Deephaven, wharf property and all, and it is a great inconvenience to her. The house is a charming old house, and some of my ancestors who followed the sea brought home the greater part of its furnishings. Miss Catherine was a person who ignored all frivolities, and her house was as sedate as herself. I have been there but little, for when I was a child my aunt found no pleasure in the society of noisy children who upset her treasures, and when I was older she did not care to see strangers, and after I left school she grew more and more feeble. I had not been there for 2 years when she died. Mama went down very often. The town is a quaint old place, which has seen better days. There are high rocks at the shore, and there is a beach, and there are woods inland, and hills, and there is the sea. It might be dull in Deephaven for two young ladies who were fond of gay society and dependent upon excitement, I suppose, but for two little girls who were fond of each other and could play in the boats and dig and build houses in the sea-sand, and gather shells and carry their dolls wherever they went, what could be pleasanter?" "Nothing," said I promptly. Kate had told this a little at a time, with a few appropriate bars of music between, which suddenly reminded me of the story of a Chinese procession which I had read in one of Marryat's novels when I was a child. A thousand white elephants.